Weather and Ag in Focus on WGAY Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. So glad that you came in to stay the afternoon. And for those of you who are wondering what the weather is going to look like, looking ahead on a seven-day forecast, you are seeing today going to hit a high of 81, warmer than I thought. I might even roll up my sleeves. I mean, I knew better than to put pants on, so it's definitely a shorts kind of a day.
You don't have any pants on?
That scared me for a second.
Thought that might get your attention.
You might want to clarify that she has a skirt on today.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and cleverly, you know, hidden underneath the desk here. So. Look, I might as well introduce everybody because we're going to chime in like this the whole hour long. So today I have with me the professional ag ladies. And so this is a group of peers.
Be careful on the whole professional part.
I know. You're going to pull your mic closer to you, by the way. Okay. So for many years, we have all worked together as peers in the industry and agriculture. And it started out, we wanted to get together for lunch, but to send a meeting notice, we didn't want anybody's boss to be a little concerned about why we were just getting together to have drinks. So on our calendars, oh, so sorry, I hope your boss isn't listening, you guys. I started making the meeting notice say professional ladies in ag. And that's what we're doing today is that way we get to talk about all the things in the industry, maybe not the same ones we covered at lunch, because no, that's not for on air.
Right.
And but I brought my peer group in today, and I have with me, I'll have you guys, I'll introduce yourself.
Marsha Van Leer, Gowan, USA.
That's
we
you?
Have to say how we know each other.
You can if you'd like. The problem is most of us are never going to be able to solve that matrix because we cannot remember.
The Kevin Bacon game.
I feel like we should have drinks then if we're going to do this. It's like,
well, you missed lunch.
That'll be the next show, Marsha. The next show.
You missed lunch for the drink part.
That's because I was getting chemical for somebody.
Oh, fine. We'll use the pretty word.
Dedicated.
Chemistry. Yeah, she was at work. All right. So then is?
I am Sarah Lovis with GK Technology.
Okay.
And last but not least, Sherry Cook with Mosaic Company.
All right. So we have experience everywhere from retail to distribution to manufacturing, seed, fertilizer, chemistry, soil sampling, soil
precision
science, precision ag, just everything and all of it. So when I talk about the weather, because in ag, that's all we ever do is talk about the weather. High of 81 today, 60% chance of rain. I don't know. I think that's passed. Did y'all have rain this morning?
A little bit.
A little bit?
We did.
Okay. And like we were talking about earlier, we're getting it at like a tenth at a time.
My husband,
that guy.
Yeah.
That guy.
Are you sure you weren't drinking every lunch?
I should have been. He was tilling this past weekend and, this last week, and he took the rain gauge down and forgot to put it up. So I know we were supposed to get like 2.5 inches sometime or another. I don't know when.
Hillsborough got a nice, inch and a half. Or inch 1.7 on
hugging it all.
Friday or Saturday it was. And now all these little tents just kind of keep it all sort of rolling. Actually, it looks pretty nice out in the countryside when you're driving around looking at the crop, as long as that one big huge windstorm didn't render you needing to replant. The crop actually looks fairly decent right there out in my backyard.
Well, we'll get to that. What about Southeast North Dakota?
We did get a little rain. I don't know. I didn't look at the gauge when I left this morning at 7 o'clock mm-hmm. to come to our event in Fargo. But it was raining lightly when I left. Yeah. So, and then the wind was picking up.
Here's the thing I've also learned. So today, 60% chance. Tomorrow, 70% chance of rain. High of 85 degrees. Good luck getting there. Going to be in the 60s overnight. But I've learned recently that sometimes you think your rain gauge is off. But I witnessed this weekend, guys pulling tricks on each other, farmer to farmer, and they're dumping water in each other's gauges.
That is awesome. I want to totally try that.
Yeah, well, one guy peed in the gauge, so I would be careful when you touch it.
That's a different kind of water we don't want to talk about.
So you may think your water is accurate, but maybe you need an electronic gauge.
That is the best practical joke. It would be even better in October during harvest.
If I see you get out of your car in my driveway with a bottle of water in your hand.
And it's yellow.
Or Mountain Dew. Or mellow yellow. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. There'll be none of that.
Good I'd grief. Be hiding my rain gauge.
Well, I got to put it in a better spot. Sarah knows where it is.
Yes, I do.
So overall, state of the crop. It's okay. I'm the one who walked in today and said, I don't know, I don't think the crop looks that great.
So I cover the upper Midwest with Mosaic. So I cover northern Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana. And I haven't done a lot of traveling out in Montana, but was western North Dakota last week, around the Minot area. And it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Depends where the hail hit. Depends where the storms have hit and all that. But I would say canola looked average. Wheat looked okay, but it's hard to tell when you're driving by at 65, right?
Right.
Or 85. And then
speed limit's going up.
What's corn, 65?
I would say
stuff.
Corn looks
she's on
okay.
the side road.
Yeah.
That's
I've
still
learned
80.
I have to set my cruise. But
corn looks,
I would say it was okay. Yeah, yeah. I think things are looking good. I don't think we're going to have, in most areas, a huge bumper crop, but I think we'll be okay. How about you, Sarah? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I kind of echo sort of what you're saying. I've definitely noticed in the soybeans, of course, you know, I'm always going to notice all the patches of iron chlorosis in different spots. And I certainly have noticed some of those where they occur. I don't know if we're having any more of a extreme year with that or not, but around the Hillsborough area in particular, when I cruise around in the back roads, it actually looks like it looks pretty nice. The small grain looks pretty nice. I am a little concerned that it seems like we've had an awful lot of moisture and high humidity lately. And so I'm not sure what that means for disease in the small grain going forward.
That means fungicide is what that means.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that today, too.
Yes, exactly. Maybe the tassels could have come out a little bit sooner on the corn. But, I mean, we've seen corn tassel much, much later from cool temperatures. So
I'm making notes. We can talk about that tassel wrap thing in the Midwest, but hold on.
Well, the old adage, knee-high corn by the 4th of July.
Right.
We were way beyond that this year.
We were.
Way beyond that. So
corn
that's
caught up quickly.
It did.
I mean, corn was pretty stunted here. I'd say even through mid-June.
Oh, absolutely.
Corn was extremely stunted, and it caught up quickly. Although, I'm a little disappointed. I haven't seen any sweet corn yet.
I feel like the sweet corn got in a little bit later.
I just get phone calls from my dad, and he's like, I got sweet corn.
Salt really? In the wound, Dad. Thanks a lot.
Could and where's that at? Southern Minnesota?
Southern Minnesota. Yeah. So if anybody's down there, you know, they're selling in Medillia right now. Mankato, I guess, has. I'm just saying. And it's local. It's not the stuff trucked in. So
Marcia's my reason for a shady butter deal. Like, she'll call me and say, I'm going to Southern Minnesota, and there's a really great deal on
quick
butter.
Quick trip
butter. So
which is coming to Fargo.
And she brings me 10 pounds of butter at a time, which I requested. So next we're going to be doing shady corn deals. Just never know.
Well, I am going to Southern Minnesota here in a couple of weeks for a family rebellion. So just saying.
The rebellion.
There's some sweet corn that's going to be coming to my house.
What goes better with sweet corn than butter?
Butter.
No
and
kidding.
All the butter. Dairy Farmer's Daughters, Sherry and I, we're all about the butter.
All about the butter.
We have lots of things. Because the more we talk, the more notes I make about the things we're going to talk about. So it's not going to take us long to fill this time frame. But there's some things that I have to put in today. One of them is the fact that Project Safe Send has been ongoing for the state of North Dakota. Department of Ag handles this. If you have unwanted, unused pesticides that you would like to get rid of, and let's face it, we all have some of those little sample things that we probably shouldn't have anymore. Time to go get rid of them. And you can take them to Project Safe Send. Tomorrow will be in Edgeley, and Wednesday will be in Valley City. For those who live in Fargo or in Cass County, that's the closest spot for you, is to head to Valley City on Wednesday morning. These will be at North Dakota DOT sites. They're open from 8 a.m. to noon. Again, you can take, let's say you've got old herbicide, fungicide, something you used on the lawn. You don't know how to get rid of it. Don't throw it in the trash. Take it there. If you have
Don't throw it down the drain.
Do not throw it down the drain. If you have leaky containers, you can call the state of North Dakota, and they will make sure that you have the appropriate bags, boxes, et cetera, to get that bagged up and taken. If you have large quantities, they want to talk to you first to reserve a spot. And this is a true story. If you believe that you have unexploded ordnance that Grandpa brought home from the Korean War or other things like that, that's a SWAT team call. That is not Project Safe Send.
Wow.
Not kidding. They have mentioned that that has happened. Somebody pulls up in the family truckster and in the trunk of the car. Well, I think these are grenades. Huh. Stop.
Yeah. Don't move.
We'll take care of this. So, yes, that can happen.
Pesticides only, not explosives.
I have also had to tell agronomists not to stand there and shop it like on the berm rummage sale. Like, okay,
you know.
Oh, there's
hey,
a partial.
I could use that.
I could have used that. No, that's not what it's for.
But in all seriousness, what a great program in the state of North Dakota.
Oh, we are one of the few states.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're so fortunate that our Department of Agriculture does that.
It's tremendous. And we dispose of things properly because they are incinerated. They're moved out of state. So no one has to worry about them getting into our landfills and such.
Right. And don't worry, there's no questions asked. Even if you still have that DDT sitting in the back of your shed that great grandpa had.
Fear Dan.
It's fine.
Fear Dan.
Yeah. You can, this is where you can get rid of it.
Hey, true story, when I worked at a retail location, we did have a container of Fear Dan. I'm like, we need to get rid of this.
So I had a customer up by Devil's Lake who called one day, and he had a 50-gallon drum of a product that we actually had to work really hard to find the name on because it was so faded, and it was starting to rust through the barrel. That's He's like, how do we get rid of this? Well, we don't touch it, number one. Mm-hmm. So that was the start of it. When you said Fear Down, the first thing I thought of, you know it's there. You smell it.
Well, I had one guy I was talking to because I was taking stuff out, and he's like, oh, he goes, I can use that.
No.
I'm like, no.
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 This is not a shopping trip.
No. Because, well, he had sunflowers. He's like, I could use it. Like, no. No, I can't. We're just going to get rid of this
properly.
This is
like a couch on the curb. Oh, there's some Fear Dan.
Actually, I showed you guys this before. I picked up two back issues of the Dakota Farmer magazine over the weekend. Oh, yeah. Feel free to hold those to the camera, Marsha. And one of these has a story in it. I'm going to have to find it in the magazine where Toxifen? Which was a insecticide for sunflowers, was registered for use. And they were excitingly announcing that this new insecticide for sunflowers was up for use, except the last paragraph says toxic to birds, fish, wildlife. I went, oh, maybe we didn't research
and anything else in your field.
Right.
I was going to say, maybe there's a reason I have no idea what this active is.
There's a reason. Yeah. In fact, I mentioned it to my husband last night, and he goes, oh, that stuff is terrible. They took that off the market. Well, yeah.
Apparently
so. But hopefully everybody finds that that's just one of the things we're going to talk about today. We've got discussions on disease such as tar spot. We mentioned frog eye earlier. We have fertilizer deficiencies that are starting to show up in the field. We think our crop looks okay. I don't know. I had a grain marketer in with Rager Bansky on Friday, and people want to be really positive about how the grain market's going to go up. I just don't see a huge crop out there right now, so we'll see. But we're going to talk about that and so much more. When we return, we're going to listen right now to the livestock updates from the American Ag Network.
This is Weather and Ag in Focus with Bridget Riedel and Dean Wysocki.
We are so busy talking in the background. The music comes up and there's a whole lot of, oh God, everybody get their headsets on. But good news, in these old Dakota Farmer magazines, I found the request for recipes, and someone is still looking for some recipes for sourdough. So nothing has changed since 1972. Marcia wants to know if she's still looking, if we could get a hold of Mrs. GB out in Mercer County.
We can hook you up.
We can help her. Yeah. My. Okay. So also, technology may not have changed a lot because really those old magazines are kind of like the original Google, right? If you think about it, that they were asking each other questions the same way we'd Google them today. Well, if you want to protect that on your farm or ranch, you should be using Tech Support Farm. And you want to talk to Chris because we don't want stress and having downtime with your tech support, as well as with the possibilities of someone swiping your personal information. So check that out at techsupportfarms.com. Chris is actually going to be speaking next week at Hefty Seed Company's Ag PhD Field Day down in Baltic, South Dakota. Now, if you have questions as today goes along or you have any comments, you can reach us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. And for those who are watching the antics of the professional ag ladies today, you will see us on Acres TV, as well as Facebook and YouTube at WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus. Okay, so the whole list of things we've been talking about, one of them that came up, all right, I heard you say the tassel should have come out sooner. Who said that? Marcia, was that you?
I think I did.
You
no,
did?
I think that was Sarah. Yeah.
Okay, y'all heard about tassel wrap down in the I-States? What's going on there?
I did not, actually.
Anybody on this one?
I heard a little bit of it. I haven't paid much attention to
it. Okay, so let me see if I get this all right. There are specific hybrids in like northern Indiana, parts of Illinois, over into Missouri, and it might be more widespread by now, where because of their planting dates, and it really targeted the dates of like April 14th to 17th, that as that corn plant was developing, there was some heat at the time where the tassel should have been emerging, but because of their planting date, it coincided with this high heat event, and the tassel was wrapped too tightly, and that affected the pollination through the silking. And especially on the bottom side of the cobs, where the pollen didn't travel down the silks to pollinate the bottom half of the kernel, bottom half of the cob. And it's really pronounced in certain trait platforms, meaning it, I think there's some insecticide trait plant forms that are really being affected. And I've seen several posts on Twitter about it. Don't tell me I spent $400 bag on seed for my corn and now I'm only going to get half of it pollinated, et cetera. So,
ooh, I bet that's going to be a fun conversation.
Or not as good as you think. Marissa?
I'm just reading this about the heat dome and corn sweat.
I just saw that on the weather station as well. Yes. Yeah. So all of the above.
Yeah, so apparently we're blaming corn sweat for increased humidity and the heat dome.
But the heat also caused us to have a tight tassel, so we didn't actually get the corn to mature.
Yeah. Or pollinate.
Is this something new?
Pollinate.
No. That's the first time I've heard of it, though.
It's not. I mean, you'll see that.
You'll see some plants that have that, right?
I've seen
that, but I don't think we ever really had a name for it.
Right. I mean, I know growing up down south, we've seen that before on, you know, certain things, and it's just, it's really an environmental thing. It's no different than, like me this year, I had some issues with a product, and it was all a planting.
Planting date?
So what we can figure out is when the crop was planted and emerging, that's when we got really cold.
Yeah.
And it sat there and was not able to metabolize.
Mm. Was it a residual herbicide? So like the seed had to grow through it?
Right. Yep. Okay. Yeah. You know, so I mean, it's an environmental thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing it might be more pronounced in a variety with this tassel wrap, but it's not the genetics' fault.
It's Mother Nature.
I'm sorry, but you know, she's kind of fickle.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. There's too many times that we blame everything we can on what came in the jug or the bag. Mother Nature affects it way more than anything.
Oh, Mother Nature's always in charge.
She wins.
Oh,
yeah.
She's the ultimate boss. I mean,
we're going to do our best to use those products in the best way that we can, but had you known that your three-day planting window would coincide with a heat dome later on that affected your pollination, you wouldn't have planned that.
Right.
So same with what you're saying about that cold weather striking.
Yeah, I mean, we figured it out. It was on certain acres, and they were planted within like 3 days, and then it got cold, and they just sat there, and it was, well, you know.
We've gotten better.
Weed control was great, though.
Oh, I'm sure the weed control is awesome.
Weed control is awesome.
We've gotten way better at this agronomic CSI. I mean, remember when we first started and we're like, I don't really know what happened here. Now we got Endon. We can go get the weather data. We just know more.
But it's so interesting to try to troubleshoot in a field to try to figure out what is going on. And of course, you know, it's always that thing where you kind of got to be careful. Like if the farmer's standing right there, you don't exactly want to go, oh, this is so cool. But at the same time, it's always interesting to try to figure out like, okay, what is causing this? What happened? And you always have to sit back and ask the questions. And then reason through the weather data, just like Bridget said, mm-hmm. and go from there.
I sort of look forward to some of those challenges. But then at the same time, if I'm going to be willing to ask a question, I got to be willing to take the answer too.
Yeah, that's the rough part. And deliver the answer to those who are asking. Because usually that's a consulting type situation where you're trying to figure it out for a farmer or a retailer or those kinds of situations. And sometimes those conversations at the end aren't always easy.
And it's always, you know, you just don't want to back your product or whatever. It's like, well, no, it's not that because it's not really the product's fault. It's not the farmer's fault. It's, you know, in this case, it's not anybody's fault, but it was everything kind of rolled up in one and there we are.
Yeah. Conditions were perfect at the time.
Yeah. I mean, it was the perfect storm. That's what it, you know, that's what I told the girl. I'm like, it was the perfect storm. You guys didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Yeah. So don't change your practice.
You know, yeah. Our product didn't do anything wrong.
But nonetheless,
there
was a performance concern.
Yeah.
And we're not, those things aren't ever going to change. I mean, even if we think about the use of sea and spray sprayers, et cetera, there will always be a Mother Nature factor.
Always. Oh, always. And I think that's something that's really interesting when it comes to technology, whether you're talking about equipment technology, computer technology, genetic technology, or you know, our pesticide technology or chemistries that we've got on the marketplace. Mother Nature is always in control. And there's a lot of science behind it. But when I'm working out in the field, I'm always talking about the intersection between science and art, because there definitely is that place where you get that interaction out there.
And some of those interactions are better than others. So All right. I have some other things on our list here. I certainly want to talk about some fertilizer deficiencies that we've been seeing. And then also, when we talked about the weather, hold on just a sec for that. When we talk about the weather, how we've been getting this little bit of rain and what that's going to lead to for some disease concerns. And then what is the title of that article in the 1976 Dakota Farmer over there?
Home-built solar dryer uses $100 a fall sunshine.
Well, now we all have to get different dryers in our houses. Okay, let's analyze that over the break. But for those who are listening,
I came from SDSU, so
if you're listening and you have questions, the JLA Insurance phone line is open at 701-293-9000.
Weather and Ag in Focus on WDAY Radio.
Well, for those of you who are wondering what the weather is going to look like for the rest of the week, well, not terribly out of control. So we are looking at highs in the 80s today and tomorrow, about mid-80s at 85. Another chance of rain coming in tomorrow with lows overnight down into the 60s. And then we're going to have that little steady chance of rain Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, a 20% chance all the way through. So if you were hoping to pick up that just a little bit more, maybe another quarter inch, the chances for you might just be there. And thank you to our live weather read brought to you by Progressive Ag Risk Management Specialists. So I have in studio with me the professional ag ladies, and we've been discussing all sorts of topics. Some of it's fueled by the fact that I have back issues from the 1970s of the Dakota Farmer magazine, 1976 and 1972. Some of those headlines, all we'd have to do is swap out the year. They're pretty much still the same. There's one of these, there's an argument in there about the farm bill. they're talking about tariffs, rural development. All of this sound familiar.
Yeah, some of this stuff just looks like something that we, yeah, it's rural development. What's ahead for North Dakota rural development? That's the cover of 1972.
I actually have the head of North Dakota's rural development, Tom Campbell, coming on in a week or two. So I'm thinking I'm just going to bring that with and just ask if anything's changed.
Oh, for sure.
How far have we gotten in history repeating itself?
The cycle's getting tighter, I'll tell you that much. Actually, Sherry and I were at Bell Banks Ag Insights this morning, and that is an event that Lynn Paulson, who is the Senior Vice President of Bell Bank Ag Finance, he speaks and he talks about what he sees going on in the markets globally. Then he also brings in Dr. David Cole, who's Professor Emeritus from Virginia Tech. And realistically, I think we still hear the same thing every year, no matter what. I mean, do you remember some of the things we talked about this morning, Sherry? It was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job just talking about what's happening in the markets, what's affecting them.
Yes.
Right? Like China, India, you know, just things to watch for and keep an eye on that really, that's who we've been watching the last how many years, right?
Yep.
So India's it really doesn't seem like it changes that much.
Yeah, India's going to be our most populous nation in the globe, and they're going to be the ones that we're going to watch. Because there are certain things they will buy from us and certain things they will not. They have a very heavy farm protectionist policy, and they want to draw from their internal farmers more than they want to import. So that's going to affect us. Also, they made very good comments such as, if we see a certain level of drop in ag product exports, that will affect our farmland values. Mm-hmm. And we are rapidly approaching that position in the marketplace where we're going to see that change.
Boy, there's a lot of balance sheets that are based on the value of those farmland.
Yes.
Of the farmland that they own.
Yes, they are. And they defined the generations very differently. They talked about an ALICE, someone who is asset limited, income capped, fully employed, and what that means to the economy, then versus someone who was, and I think they used another one, he called it a Henry. I wish I had my notes in front of me, but he talked about how those are the folks that on paper own most of the assets and have the most spending. But if we see a change in the stock market while the rest of the nation stops spending about 7%, that group of people stops spending 20%. And how that affects the overall GDP, because they make up like roughly 38% of the economy in the country. It's wild how interconnected all of that can be, especially to farms.
And I always want to back up and remind ourselves land prices were relatively high in the 1970s and people were buying. And then all of a sudden in the 80s, land prices collapsed. Definitely one of the components of that. Of that farm crisis during that time. Not to be a Debbie Downer. We got to talk about something more fun.
We will. We'll talk about things.
That's depressing. I apologize.
That's okay. But a big change on that was also the fact that interest rates were wildly higher than where we are right now. Okay. So speaking of something different, we talk about the crop that's out there right now, and what we see for fertilizer deficiencies. Anyone? Bueller?
I do want to make mention that in Northwest North Dakota, I was definitely getting some calls about sulfur deficiency in small grains, which was, it's really interesting. You know, I think it's easier for us to see sulfur deficiency sometimes in corn because sulfur deficiency is something that looks very generally yellow and oftentimes can actually be confused with nitrogen, except for the fact that nitrogen usually shows its symptoms on the lower parts of the leaves first, and sulfur will show it on the top leaves, the younger tissue first. And so what happens is as that nutrient deficiency progresses and becomes worse, the entire plant becomes yellow. Well, in small grain in particular, for sulfur, it's usually just a matter of like a couple of days before the whole plant turns yellow. And it's very easy to confuse sulfur with nitrogen. And that particular plant is, yes, those deficiencies in that particular crop. And so oftentimes what happens is it gets mistaken. Sulfur will get mistaken for nitrogen. Nitrogen will get top dressed and nothing gets better. And people are scratching their head as to what's going on. It took me a little bit. I got a couple of phone calls on this. And after digging into it, I really think that we had some sulfur issues up there in that neck of the woods.
And it depends where you're at. Where we had the heavy rains, yeah, we saw sulfur, nitrogen, any mobile nutrients in that soil profile that can move, we saw some of those deficiencies. And I think you mentioned earlier about doing a tissue sample. If you see some of these things, it's June, and, oh, my crop looks really yellow, or I'm seeing this low spot, or whatever. You know, your best bet is a tissue sample. It's just a snapshot for what's happening at that time frame. And the sad part is if you see a deficiency, usually you've already lost a right. bit of yield.
Right.
So what you're doing is then a rescue treatment, right? And so, but yeah, I've been seeing more potassium just the last few years. And, you know, we were having that conversation mm-hmm. earlier about that, just similar thing there. Potassium doesn't move a whole lot in the soil, some, but we've been seeing these 250 plus bushel yields. We're seeing weather conditions, you know, this heavy gumbo clay ground we have in the valley here in a lot of areas ties it up a lot quicker than what we see in other areas of the country. So I've been seeing multiple different things. And as Sarah said, it's tough to tell the difference sometimes yeah. if you don't have a good eye for that or haven't been trained for that, because there's definitely issues there for sure. And now with all this humidity, we add a whole nother layer of disease onto that, right?
Well, and the other thing too is I've seen it before in wheat. You have to be careful that it is for sure sulfur and right. not wheat streak mosaic.
Right.
Oh, good point.
Because yeah. that looks a lot like a sulfur or nitrogen deficiency when it comes hitting too. And out there where they have, you know, some winter wheat and whatnot, that's a good possibility too. So, you know, just making sure that, yeah, like you said, these guys are educated on that. And my question is, how many growers are trying to save a buck and shorten themselves on fertilizer?
I was mm-hmm. kind of going to ask that too. Are we under fertilizing in some cases and causing some of our own concerns?
I believe we are. When we talk to some of these growers, you know, they're like, well, you know, this is what we want. This is what we're shooting for.
We got a goal number that we're targeting.
Yeah, we're doing this, but we're only going to fertilize for this. And now all of a sudden we're getting this and we're not amending that like we should.
I think Sherry brought up a really good point where we're raising these really big yields. I'm going to put them in terms of corn, but honestly, like our small grain has the small grain genetics that are out there have also improved over the years.
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And so we've got greater productivity potentials that are out there in the field, but have our minds actually been reprogrammed to think that we've got these higher or these greater productivity potentials? And are we thinking rationally about making sure that we're fertilizing for those greater productivity potentials?
And as the old adage goes, bushels pay the bills.
Yes, they do.
Right? I mean, nobody that I know of anyway, and I know a lot of farmers, nobody wants to grow less yield.
Right.
So I hear that a lot in the fall, like, yeah, we're going to cut back, you know.
I'm just going to mine
for a couple years. Well, when I have AgVice, laboratories telling me that we've got soil test levels of 1 part per million.
I didn't think you could get a one on a soil test.
No, I asked Dr. John Lee about it before he retired, and he said, well, Sherry, we don't print a zero.
No.
So we've been mining already. So I always caution guys, fertilize for what you're shooting for the yield goal that you want.
Sure.
And then go from there. As we just talked, Mother Nature rules all. We never know what she's going to throw at us. So
you can always fertilize. Say you're fertilizing for 200 bushel wheat or 200 bushel wheat. Would be awesome.
That would be very fun.
200 bushel corn. Okay. Fertilize for 200 bushel corn. If growing conditions look good, you can always come in and top dress and maybe bump that a little bit.
Absolutely.
With some 28% sure. and some ammonium thio. You can do the same with wheat. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're going to fertilize for 60, 70 bushel wheat. It looks really good. Okay, we're going to, you know, let's come in and do a little mitigation and, you know, give it a little oomph. Yeah.
And, you know, something else that's really important to think about is the fact that as farm size and field size have gotten bigger, we don't have the same productivity potential across the entire field. It's really important to think about the productivity potential across the field as variable. If you have a part in that field that is going to yield 100 bushels of wheat and you know it, or 90 bushels of wheat, but if you know you've got other parts of the field that are only going to yield 20 bushels of wheat, goodness gracious, fertilize for that potential.
Yep. Yeah.
It's very different spots. And you can do that. This is not anything that's new or crazy. Mm-hmm. We can do these variable rate applications easily.
If the grower can't do it themselves, the retailer can.
Absolutely.
We're variable rating everything. Yeah. We're variable rating fertilizer and seed. And frankly, with these new spray systems, we're variable rating our herbicides.
Right. And by the way, in those areas where you have lower yield potential in the field, if you only have that 20 bushels of wheat potential in that part of the field, generally speaking, if that field has had historical average rates of fertilizer across the field spread, there's probably an accumulation of fertilizer for those non-mobile nutrients like your phosphorus and potassium left over there. So if you only have a 20 bushel yield potential, chances are you really probably will find extra phosphorus and potassium in those spots, and you probably won't need to apply a whole lot. It's the best way to be efficient with what's out there.
Or my other plug for that, and those low yielding spots, that's also a good spot for like a CRP or Equip or something like that, and take it out
another
of production.
Crop.
It's not doing anything for you.
I had a question this weekend. Let me randomly throw this one out there.
Squirrel.
Thank you. Yes. So all of the windstorms that we've had, lots and lots of trees have been taken down. Some of them have been piled in fields. And I had a farmer say, we took all of our broken limbs, trees that were down, and we piled them in, you know, they call it the sour patch of the field, right? It's an alkali spot. He said the reason we did that was a few years ago, we had some tree limbs down and we piled them in a spot like that that was alkali. And we were going to come back in the fall and burn them. We kind of forgot about them. And they sort of just broke down naturally and put more organic matter in the soil. And I feel like that amended my soil and I had less alkali there. All right, I'm seeing everybody like, you know, thinking, is it possible?
I could see it a little bit because if you do any like research with gardens and stuff, they always talk about mulching with wood chip.
Yeah.
With wood shavings or wood chip. So I can see it.
Mm-hmm. So there's potential.
It's a potential. Is it fixing that spot per se? I wouldn't go that far.
I don't think it's fixing it. Not if you're considering that a long-term fix.
And I don't know if I'd call it an amendment either. I mean, it's wood chips. I would say it's probably more of a short-term thing.
Yeah.
That flukish deal that's where it was and that's what happened and it was a low spot, right?
Right.
I'm always trying to think about how does this work? And so, like, I'm thinking about, you know, this wood pile. And let's put it in terms of wood chips. One of the things that would probably happen, especially if those wood chips were incorporated into the soil, you would change probably the water holding capacity. Okay. Especially, you know, if they're kind of mushy, you're probably going to increase that water holding capacity. The salt is still there. What salt does to a plant is it kind of almost makes the plant feel like it's in a drought situation. It has trouble taking up water from the soil. Okay. And so if you've got now a soil that can hold more water because it's got these wood chips in there, it might have more water available.
Sure.
The salt is still probably there.
I don't think the salt's going away.
And yeah. So eventually when that wood degrades and goes away, now is that a scientific thought process? No, that's just,
we're just,
that's
just
me like talking here. I don't know. That's, yeah, it's interesting.
It's a quick fix, but it's not going to save you.
I wouldn't be spreading wood chips out across anybody's field.
No, not that even sounds, just to fix an alkali spot. No, mm-hmm.
Economically unattainable.
Yeah. I don't know. I got a really big wood pile in Hunter, but I don't think that's going to do it.
Well, I mean, we've
I have
tried
marshmallows.
Cheese.
Okay, hold all the recipe thoughts just a second. We've got a break, and then when we come back.
This is Weather and Ag in Focus with Bridget Riedel and Dean Wysocki.
Here We Grow 2025 is raising wheat here at WDAY. We're custom farming 20 acres of wheat with our farm partners, Jim and Michael Euland, near Gardner, North Dakota. And a big thank you to two of our sponsors. One of them, Mark Wagner with ND Estate Services. Their job is to make things a lot more simple when it comes to your farm transitions, probate, and so much more. Check him out at ndestateservices.com. And then also, we want to say thank you to Thor Buildings, because post-storm, many people are taking on some building projects, whether it's replacing shops, farm sheds, and so much more. And you can talk to the folks over at Thor Buildings, because they can help you do buildings on a customized basis depending on what your needs might be, whether it's for equipment, livestock, and so much more. So the Professional Ag Ladies are in studio with me today. As we talked about the weather earlier, we realized that our conditions are quite ripe and ready for fungicide. I've been hearing a lot about tar spot only because I've gotten messages from out of state at this point. Tar spot is a late disease in corn. It looks like little tiny dots of tar on the leaves. This was a question from Ohio. He said, well, we're debating if we should spray for tar spot. Well, if you're in Ohio and you're at this stage of the game, I believe the answer is yes. Yes to all of it, because they're just going to get it. Marcia's laughing. You've seen tar spot.
Just do it.
Yeah, you can't wait anymore.
I almost feel like, especially in the I states, that just needs to be a planned application.
At this point, it does.
I mean,
they're
just
going to get it.
You know, the I states, Michigan, you know, lower bowl of Michigan is another big spot for that. And
we've confirmed it in several counties in North Dakota, most of eastern South Dakota. You see it in Minnesota.
Yep.
Is it a planned treatment back in your home country?
It is now. It was not, but it needs to be. I mean, it's kind of like when we're doing white mold in soybeans. It's just,
you got to plan.
It has to be a planned treatment now.
Yeah. You need to do something to think that through.
And you know, when your local agronomist or consultant tells you that you have it, spray. Just go spray.
Don't wait.
They're not telling you this because they just have fun telling you this. Just, they're telling you to protect your yield. So spray.
Okay, so all of us have had experience having to be in the field at a retail level as agronomists. And this is an average crop with not great prices. And you got to go tell your farmer that the right thing to do is one more application. How easy is that conversation?
Oh, and at this time of the year, farmers are so sick and tired of being in their sprayers.
And
the last thing they want to do is
go back
and
out.
Yes, they're tired of being in their sprayers and they're tired of spending money.
Yeah.
And so having those conversations is generally pretty tough. I know when it comes to something like white mold in soybeans, one of the things that I've started kind of dabbling with a little bit with growers is the concept of variable rate applications. It seems like not everywhere, especially in soybeans, across the field, not everywhere across the entire field do you have that really thick canopy. You have some areas of the field where maybe the canopy isn't quite as heavy and thick, and you might get a little bit more air through there. And so playing around with the idea of trying to put that fungicide right where it's needed rather than across the entire thing. So that can help manage some costs too, but it's hard.
And also make sure you know your varieties.
Yes.
You know, a more upright soybean probably not going to have the issues that a bushy type bean is going to have. Corn, I mean, I don't think there's any genetics that are against tar spot.
Not right now. There's nothing that's genetically available. I honestly think when it comes to white mold, we're better than what we used to be. I mean, it was like we found white mold all the time. And I don't know if that means we are just doing a better job weather-wise or genetics. I feel like we just have a better grip on what we once did for white mold.
All of the above.
Yeah.
Right? Lately, I mean, I think we've just had it for so many years that we just know more of what to do. I think the genetics are better.
Way better.
Way better than what they used to be. So,
and here's the other thing. If you've got an agronomist who has actually gone out and trudged across the crop at this time of the year, which is now super tall, this is like the worst time of the year to be scouting. It's hot. It's humid. The crop is tough to walk through. You cannot ride the four-wheeler anymore. So if you actually have an agronomist that has done that and identified a need for an application, goodness gracious, listen.
So unlike that thing on Twitter that says AI is going to replace agronomists.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's a no. All right. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Stay tuned. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.